Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Why is gold pushing to all-time highs? Simply because the cost of living is up almost 18% since 2021. The $34 trillion national debt has investors worried when this house of cards will come crashing down. This is why so many Americans are turning to Birch Gold Group. Text COAST to 989898 and get your free info kit on gold and to see how Birch Gold can help you convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold. Text COAST to 989898 now.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me tell you about Mariel Ford Clark. Since her own near-death experience in 1992, we'll have her explain that. Mariel Ford Clark has dedicated her life to exploring the mystery of life and death. She has studied many cultures where the afterlife is considered our true home. And from the various research gleaned, she now understands that a belief in the afterlife determines and impacts on just how one grieves. And her book is called Where After? Where Do Our Loved Ones Go After They Die? Her website is her name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Mariel, welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, George, from the western shores of Ireland, and it's great to be here, and I know it's nighttime there, so good night to everybody listening.
It sure is. What time is it in your neck of the woods?
It is 8:10 a.m.
Well, great. And tell us about your near-death experience in 1992. What happened to you?
Well, I suppose to start, my near-death experience happened when I was on the operating table. I had been diagnosed with serious and extensive cervical cancer.
Oh, my gosh.
And at that time, too, my life was very complicated. I was very unhappy in my marriage, and death would have been a welcome reward for me at that stage. And when I died, apparently on the table, the surgeon had said that to me later. He said that somebody, definitely, he said, in a higher power was watching over me. He said I had bled outwards continuously, and I had died, and I had been pronounced dead, and they kept working on me. So days later, when he came and presented me with all these, like, facts that I should have died, I said, first of all, I said, why the hell didn't I? It would have saved me all this conflict and all this sadness that my heart and my soul was feeling. And then I started to think, okay, why did I survive? Why was I the one? Why could I not have died and found my peace? But during my near-death experience, the peace, the serenity, I was totally drawn into a light-filled, like, vacuum. It was full, and I can still see it now as I'm speaking to you, filled with this beautiful golden energy, golden light. I was embalmed within this beautiful, to me, it was a God-like, it was a God presence. I felt so peaceful. There was a serenity in my body that I had not known. I felt at one with all of creation. And I needed to stay there. There was no pain. There was no conflict. There was just this heavenly love. It was a love. There was a music that just resounded that I had never heard before. And that place still remains with me and remained with me long after my NDE. So much so, it compelled me to start research, to start reading up, to start finding out what are NDE, why some people survived, how I had a vivid recall of the other side and what happened and being told it was not my time. But then I suppose, George, I can tie it back to when I was much younger. I had this incredible, amazing spiritual experience when I was just 15 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
So profound was that experience with Mother Mary coming to me that I could not tell anybody because I was afraid that I would be cast aside, as often happened in Ireland when you had some kind of a spiritual experience or if you were gifted, you know, with psychic abilities. So I stayed very quiet about it for nearly 20 years. So when I started to research about the NDE, in my own NDE, I was drawn back to that spiritual experience I had all those years ago when I was 15. And I started to recover much quicker. I started to bless my body. I started to bless the relationship and to give me the strength to do what I needed to do at that stage. And I left my marriage. And that, it took 3 years then before I could really, really start the mental and the emotional healing of the body. And then the spiritual body needed a lot of healing because I had a big journey of self-discovery on life after death and the journey of the soul, reincarnation, past life regression. And I started studying all of these various modules. Even though I have a scientific background, I graduated as a serologist in veterinary science. So my whole self was being challenged because the left side of my brain was just familiar with data and experiential learning and analysis and logic. So then I had to start, you know, working with my more creative, my right side of my brain. And it was just amazing, you know, what unfolded through the journey over the years.
When you had your near-death experience, did you have the classic out-of-body experience with it as well, or did that not happen?
I remember myself just being floating out of the body. And not that I was... Now, there was a huge commonality, George, you know, with people who are NDE experiences, mm-hmm. you know, floating above the body, seeing themselves like rising from the bed and watching doctors trying to resuscitate and revive them. They remember going through a tunnel and being drawn into a light. I remember being drawn out of my body and being more or less catapulted into this magnificent light. So I take from that while there are huge commonalities on NDE, not everyone has the actual same experience, but the commonalities are the same. And, you know, when I didn't have that feeling of being catapulted back into my body either, which some have where they are feeling that they are just a thud and their heart starts to beat again and the brain starts to function and the pulses start to moderate. So mine was, while it was a huge NDE, I didn't have the tunnel. I did have the light. I did have the floating above my body. I did have this beautiful presence of love. And I feel it was a God light. I didn't have the bridge for somebody, but a hand did extend across the ethers to say it was not my time. And I firmly believe, George, to this day, that it was my father's hand who had died the year previous.
Okay.
I feel that he granted me this divine dispensation, or petitioned a dispensation from the good Lord for me. So that was my experience of my NDE, but it has never left me, George. It will always remain, and it becomes more magnified and more precious as the years go by.
But you think it was your father who kind of convinced you to come back to the physical plane?
I would say, put it this way, George, it was my father's essence that I recognized.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was working through a God presence, but it was him I recognized. And at that stage, George, I would have done anything for my father. And later, after my NDE, my father actually appeared to me. That was my I had an after-death communication. I've had many of them, and I've witnessed many of them. But when my own father appeared to me, when I was having one of my major, major panic attacks, where I had lost my breathing, I had lost my breath, I was choking, I couldn't sit up. And my father's presence sat on the bed in the middle of the night in the dark. And I could see his outline. I could see his shirt. I could see his blue cardigan. And he kept saying to me, "You are all right now, Akudin." Akudin was his favorite name for his daughters. Akudin is the term of endearment. It's like my love or my little pet. You're okay. So and I remember looking at him, George, and I said, "Dada, you need a haircut." And my father loved his hair. So his hair, like, we used to have to nearly tie his hands behind his back to have a haircut. So, and I remember saying, "Dada, you need a haircut." And he smiled and he folded his arms. And then I reached over to turn on the light and he was gone. So I've no doubt my father petitioned. I would say it wasn't my father, but it was his essence that I recognized, that it was not my time. So obviously, George, I was spared for a greater purpose. And I think finally now, all these years later, writing Whereafter and adding in my own experiences with clients and the research, the medical and the scientific research, as a proof of, as evidential proof that the afterlife is real and it's available to all of us, irregardless of religion, belief systems, dogma, creed. The afterlife is available to all of us.
At what point, Marielle, after you came back, did you get involved in this, the research of near-death studies and the belief that this really happened to you?
Okay, I suppose, George, the first year I spent on recovering, on getting my body
back in shape,
to wholeness, back to perfect health.
Okay.
And then I went to London and I did a workshop with the late Louise Hay on You Can Heal Your Body. And I remember getting her book and she autographed it. And I came back home to Ireland and I started to read her book, an incredible book.
Oh, yes, so she was an incredible person.
Oh, and it was such an honor, George, to have met her and to have hugged her. And I thanked her for her work that has helped many. And she said, "Well, honey, that's what we're here for." And it was just, she was so natural. She was so beautiful. But when I got back home, I started to read the book in depth. And I came to the section on forgiveness. And I went, "What? Forgiveness?" So I just licked my fingers. And I pass all the pages got to do with forgiveness, because in my books, I was perfect. I did nothing wrong. I didn't need, forgiveness. I needed to really lick my wounds and feel that I was a victim of my circumstances. So it took about 3 months, and I lifted the book again. And one morning, I was reading through the chapter on forgiveness, and she said to get a mirror and to look at yourself and to spend time looking at your face, looking at your eyes. And it was at that moment that I had a huge breakthrough. And I broke down, I cried, and I cried. And I realized that I had to take and accept my part in the breakdown of my marriage. It wasn't all one-sided as I would have thought. I realized that I was, my actions, my behaviors, my words, all had a contributing factor to where I was right now on my healing journey. And most of all, I had to forgive myself and I had to release myself from the victim mentality. It was so lovely to feel victimized because, bless my ex, my life had been very challenging with him. And he was a policeman with rank. So any form of abuse would, at that stage, would have been, I felt, not believed.
Right.
So I had a lot of forgiveness to do. But I think the most important part was that day, that morning, I released myself from the ties and the bonds of victimhood. And I set myself free. And it was through the forgiveness. And funnily enough, George, the forgiveness process is one of the huge aspects that I teach in my workshop. But the last phase of the book is all about love and forgiveness. And with love and forgiveness, we become whole again.
At what point in the near-death experience did you realize there's something very weird here and very real?
I suppose for me it was contemplation afterwards. When I was actually in it, it was like my body was light. My body was not the heavy, tormented soul that it was on the earth plane. My body was light. It was free. It was love. It was filled with love. It was filled with this beautiful energy. There was music that resounded. Obviously, I know now it was with my soul lessons. And this energy and this presence has stayed with me. And the point I suppose I'm trying to say, George, is it was only afterwards when I was told that I was so lucky to be alive that the surgeon said he couldn't understand how I survived. And it was afterwards I realized how really blessed and lucky I am and that I must have been saved. There must have been a God reason, a God purpose for me to survive. And maybe now that the whereafter is written, that whereafter was totally guided as well. And then the NDEs, when I started to research them, to realize that NDEs, George, have been documented for thousands and thousands of years. It's hard to believe it. And, you know, the oldest surviving reports of NDEs goes back to Plato and Aristotle, Socrates, I discovered. They all believed in an outward journey, that the soul leaves the body and takes this outward journey into the afterlife. And NDEs are very, very commonly recorded. Now, there are many doctors, many psychologists, psychiatrists that endorse the afterlife. There is wonderful research in NDEs and the reports by doctors who have endorsed their patients that were pronounced clinically dead. And at the risk of being ridiculed by their medical cohort, they have said no. This is happening.
Yeah.
People are coming back and they have vivid, vivid recall of who they have met, what they had witnessed on the other side, what they were told, how they were stopped, how they were told to go back. So all of this has been, I suppose, a huge passion and a journey of self-discovery has arisen from that, George.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.